Welcome back to the Purple Menace Podcast. Billy Wessels, Clint Foster, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Indeed.
But I do want to thank everyone that listened to Monday's show with Chris. Got a lot of positive feedback on that. For people that are TCU fans and not TCU fans alike that listen to it just because of the title and everything going on in the world right now. So
yeah, good conversation, important conversation.
Important conversation, and it wasn't as controversial as I feared it might be.
Yes.
So I think we all were like, I was like, oh no. But yes, so thank you all for sticking around with us through this episode. But Clint's back in his regular co-hosting duties. Clint, how you doing today?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Been helping you try and finish this puzzle here.
Yeah, my long hinted at move officially starts tomorrow. We signed the lease and everything. So there's a bunch of boxes in my living room. But me and the girlfriend have been working on a 1,000-piece Peter Pan puzzle.
That's a mouthful.
That's fun to say.
Yeah.
For the greater portion of this quarantine, and there's still roughly 170 pieces left. There was like 190 pieces left until Clint got here.
Yeah.
Clint comes in and is secretly really good at puzzles, guys. So if you need some help on this, Clint's for hire. So
yes.
Working on this
for all your Peter Pan pixie dust puzzle needs.
There you go. More P words. P words are fun. like prospects.
Yes.
Here we go. Look at this.
Shall we speak?
We go straight into, let's start with baseball prospects because yesterday was the first round of the MLB draft. Today is rounds 2 through 5. Again, this is a shortened draft. If you haven't heard that by now, get out from under your rock that you're in. But yeah, and as far as TCU players go, everyone's returning. So it's really a matter of if any of the high school commits go early. And there's really only one guy to worry about, and that is Carter Baumler. He's a guy that is regarded as I saw him back in April, was the number 82 overall prospect, and an article posted a week or so ago at the Des Moines County Register. He's from Iowa.
Yeah, we've got some pretty good luck with Iowa guys throwing balls.
Yeah, yeah. You know, is that a Max Duggan shout-out right
there? Yeah, it's a Max Duggan shout-out. This is a Max Duggan stand podcast.
It is. But it sounds like he is a guy that he's up to 102 on the most latest big board, mock draft, whatever you want to call it, I've seen. But baseball is so widely different than the other sports, it's crazy and so hard to predict. But big arm guy, it sounded like back in April, if he got drafted early enough, he'd go. And this article published the other day at the same newspaper, it sounds more likely he'll stay.
Yeah, I mean, and we were speaking about this briefly before we started recording, but I feel like, especially in this year, it seems like the positives far outweigh the negatives to go the college route. Because
yeah.
We don't even know if and when minor league baseball is going to start again. It's not like when you do play minor league baseball, you get any kind of significant paycheck out of it anyway in a normal year.
I think the thing is with this, the max a player can sign for, I shouldn't even speculate because I'm not 100% sure. I think I saw after the first round, it's like 160K guaranteed. Somewhere between 150 and 300K guaranteed, which is obviously still a giant chunk of change.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But it's not like normal years, the first round, like as a slot, $5 million, like what's his face got last year for going to the Reds, our pitcher that I can't think of his name of right now.
Lodolo.
Yeah. He got a nice paycheck for being a top five pick.
Yeah.
But that's different for how it is this year.
Well, and I'm saying like most players in the minor leagues week to week, while you're developing, you're not making just tons and tons of money. Signing bonuses aside. But my thing is, if you're going to be developing anyway, you know, why not be in college where you for sure are going to be able to at least work out this fall and more than likely have a season next year?
Yeah, and I mean, season could be next year, but you can work out with your teammates in the fall. And you saw minor leaguers are getting cut. Like, minor leaguers are getting cut left and right.
Oh, yeah.
Minor league teams are getting cut left and right now. So
mm-hmm.
I think it makes sense unless you're a early pick or the money's totally different from each spot. If the
mm-hmm.
money's good, and that's kind of what I was reading earlier, that if the money's good, he'll go. If the money's not right, he'll stay. So I don't know. I think it's really 50-50. When I was the first article I read made me think, all right, it's like 80% he's going. But now I'm like, it's closer to 50-50.
I really
don't know.
The further he falls, you have to think that improves the chances of him staying at TCU
mm-hmm.
For, you know, the reasons that we were just discussing. And this year, with everything being so unusual and with there really not even being a high school baseball season this year, I mean, you saw the results in the draft. I mean, this was the latest, I don't know if it was ever, but certainly in a really long time, that it took before the first high school player came off the board.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, around like the 9th pick, Billy? Is that right?
Yeah, it was. I think the first 7 were all college guys, and then you started seeing a couple high school guys go. So
yeah.
I think it was mostly college guys. You saw Schloss and Sarlu's tweet last night. It's like, hey, go to college.
Yeah,
see what's more reason than ever now to go to college. And if you're a minor leaguer, you might have a chance of playing in the spring. College, you're definitely going to play in the spring. You probably get some workouts in the fall. Depends on how the rules are going to shake out and what's all going to look like. So obviously we're biased here. We want them to come
sure,
here.
Sure.
But also in college this year, though, especially, you're going to have to compete with like 30 guys instead of just 20 guys. You're going to compete with a bigger room than a smaller room, which makes a big difference too. But a guy like him, like Carter, is a guy who throws 95 miles an hour. He could be your number – he could be your ace or number two next year, depending on how things go.
You're going to have an opportunity to slot in.
Yeah, I mean, Schloss has always showed if you're talented, you can play.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's like you have to sit and earn your – if you're – you have to earn your spot. You don't have to get – you don't get handed a spot because you're a senior or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely better to have an opportunity to play than to not have an opportunity to play. If – you know, who knows if, you know, you're getting drafted, which minor league team you're going to slot in with or if that team is going to exist. Or,
yeah, I mean, if you, like, if you get drafted by Oakland, you legit might not have a team to go to for a year. Like,
yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, and that so, talk about stunning your development.
It really would. So we'll see. Again, I think the draft starts. It's 2:30 right now as we're recording this. I think it starts at 4 or 5 today. So keep an eye out for that. That name really is the one name to watch. But there are a bunch of other commits over the weekend. We hinted last week there were a couple extra names out there that I hadn't seen yet. We got a better idea of that. One of them is a fun name, Tripp Banta. 2021 kid, 5'11", 200-pound lefty from right here in Fort Worth. Pitcher, fastball hits 87. Curveball, changeup, sitter on 80. So that's an okay split, not an overpowering fastball. Also plays some outfield. So maybe he's an outfielder. Maybe he's a spot guy. Maybe he's a reliever who turns into something. But usually you see a lot of the baseball recruiting going for like 2022 and 2023 guys. This is a guy that maybe slipped under the radar and Schloss sees something here.
Yeah, and like you say, got to love the name. Got to love the hometown. Yeah. Tripp Banta. I mean, that is just – it's so fun.
It's a baller name.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, and I mean, like you say, he may end up slotting in as an outfielder. It's easy to forget that, you know, lots of times, especially with smaller schools, not to say that he's – I don't know what school he's at in Fort Worth.
Lake Country Christian. It's one of the
Country Christian. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So again, with very small schools, typically your pitchers are, I mean, he throws 87, so it's not like he's a slouch, but usually your pitchers are just the most athletic guys on the team.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily set in stone that just because you pitch in high school, you're going to pitch at the next level. So
yeah. So he's a guy that could come in and play outfielder here and then develop a little bit more and become a star. Who knows?
Yeah.
He's not a guy that's really highly touted right now, but a lot of guys haven't been highly touted that come up like you. I was watching something about the draft the other day, how like Albert Pujols was a mid-rounder. Jacob DeGrom was taken like the ninth round after the Mets took Harvey in the first round. It's kind of weird how baseball talent develops even at that level, how late it develops. So.
Yeah, the baseball draft is unlike any of the other drafts. It's very interesting to try to
attempt
to follow.
No, it's I just like I was reading the Rangers picked a second baseman from Mississippi State yesterday, and I was like, I don't know enough about this kid, but as like people were destroying the pick. It's like, how dare you take this guy? I go, you don't know. You saw him play like a month of games 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And there's such a small sample size. We don't know anything right now.
Well, that's like that Minnesota pitcher that we shellacked.
Yeah, who got taken, third overall, fourth overall by the Browns?
Yeah, And people, you know, a lot of Frog fans at least were like kind of chuckling about that. But it's like, hey, I mean, you know, that was one game. You're allowed to have bad games as a pitcher, first of all. And second of all, he didn't have a full season of work this year to really showcase. I mean, they're probably going off of measurables and the previous season.
Yeah, he's also a Team USA guy too. I mean, he's a really good pitcher.
Yeah,
it's just TCU whooped him pretty good.
We just got a really good team. By the way,
on a football stadium too, which throws another wrinkle in pitchers. But of course, the TCU pitchers succeeded. But whatever. That's beside the point.
Yeah,
beside the point.
Well, I gotta get this in. All I know is if this kid comes to TCU and he's really great, that'll be a trip and something fun to banter about.
There you go. Good job. I'm proud of you. I noticed the wheels were working on something for a while. I'm glad it was worth it. Here's another name that I like. Connor Rodrigue. Not Rodriguez. Rodrigue.
Rodrigue.
2022. 6'1", 185 outfielder from Denham Springs, Louisiana. That's closer to Baton Rouge, but between Baton Rouge and New Orleans.
That's where the jeans just bubble up from under the ground, right?
The jeans?
The blue jeans. Like denim.
Oh. I was like, the Talon jeans? Yeah, it's everywhere. No,
like the Levi's.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that.
There's like a pool, and they just kind of float.
They just float jeans
to
up.
The top. Yeah. That's where you harvest them.
That could just be, I mean, leftover from Katrina.
Bottled at the source.
And floating up.
That could, yes.
That's a much darker thing, but I'm from Louisiana. I can say that, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to say now. Yeah. But either way, Conor Rodriguez ready to get back to work this weekend after the layoff for the Rona. In his second game back, he went 2-for-3 with 5 RBIs and a combo meal. If you listen to a fantasy focused baseball podcast, that's when you get a home run and a steal in the same game.
Ooh.
So he had a combo meal with 2-for-3, 5 RBIs. So he's ready to get back. He's another more highly touted prospect here. So excited to see what he can do.
So how is he? Is he playing select baseball? Is that what
yeah,
that is?
Yeah, he's playing. I saw the name of it. Oak was it Oak Grove or Live Oak or something like that.
Holly
Oak
Grove.
Was in there. Maybe it was. But it's in a select league that's closer to New Orleans. So
yeah.
That's where he was playing over the
weekend. Okay. Okay.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And then the last name is Gabriel Miranda.
Any relation to Lin-Manuel?
I wish. Don't tempt me with a good time with that. I will break into Hamilton with the drop of a hat, and I'm very excited for July 3rd. So. Gabriel Miranda, 6 foot, 185 pound lefty from Orange, California, 2022 kid. Was a member of the 2019 under 16 Team USA developmental team.
Easy for you to say.
No, it's not. Ironically, no. So it's clearly some talent there. Couldn't find like a number rating on the perfect game or whatever rating scale, but he's the other guy that clearly they've seen some talent in and getting players from all over the country. Like, TCU baseball traditionally does.
Yep. Just go identify the talent and bring them on in here, and let's get back to the College World Series.
I trust. That's a good question. Who do you trust more, developing talent, Schloss or GP?
Ooh, oh man, that's a good question. I mean, like,
I want to say
I feel like the little girl on the old El Paso commercial. Why not both?
Yeah, but if you had to pick one, like, it's so hard because baseball. Like, you and I cover recruiting and watch all this. We hardly watch any high school baseball. It's not a thing. High school football is much easier to find. It's much more highly focused on the football guys. So, and TCU's traditionally getting a top 10, 15 baseball recruiting class every year, just almost always.
Uh-huh.
And football, you're getting a 30 to 40 range, and GP's putting guys in the first round of the NFL draft every year.
Yeah, you could definitely argue that Coach B has done more with less consistently.
I think that's a fair way of saying it. Both obviously do great jobs. But I would say GP is probably slightly better at that. But Schloss gets the overall the better talent. Like this Baumler kid, like we're talking about the perfect 10 rating scale. He's a 10. Like he's a guy that is an elite prospect. Yeah.
Schloss is excellent at identifying talent, and he's a great recruiter. But if the question is who's better at developing talent, and again, not a slight at Schloss, but you look at Coach P, who's able to see the running back and say, you're a defensive end.
Trevon Merrick and say, you're a safety.
Yeah,
Trevon Merrick was somebody that no one, like he was very lightly recruited, and he's getting every preseason honor. So
yeah.
I want to see, honestly, now that I say that, I want to see his, how many offers he had coming out of high school. Because it wasn't a whole lot, I don't believe. Or maybe I'm really wrong on this, and I was like, oh yeah, he did get all these offers. Ole Miss, all right, let me see. This is not working. Computer's slow. Arizona, Baylor, Colorado. He did have a Georgia offer, so some good offers in there, but it's like he's turned into one of the best players in all the country now. So
yeah.
So those are all your baseball commits from over the weekend, but talking a little bit of football with a somewhat not really natural segue. Football players are on campus now. I think practice can officially start on Monday but workouts and stuff can start Monday.
You love to see
for kids. We've seen kids moving in. A lot of kids wearing the mask. The masks they're supposed to be wearing. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Merrick. I was wearing like the same mask. I was like, oh, I got that exact same mask. It's random. It's just straight purple with white stripes on it. Or white earbands, if you will. Nothing's come out yet as far as like kids testing positive for the Rona here. It has people, kids have at Bama, OK State, Boise, and Texas have had at least 2 positive tests each.
You can't help but chuckle at the OK State.
Yeah, well, after Gundy's outrageous remarks earlier in the quarantine.
Hey, all I know, man, that's frog factor right there. That's, an exceptional immunity. you know, to all things pandemic related.
Yep. I mean, bleed that's purple and you bleed purple and you'll never bleed out.
There you go.
so there
we
there
cannot is. Die. You heard it here first.
Yes. We're immortals here at TCU. I think we'll see more. I think Houston made headlines because they weren't testing anybody. But if you showed symptoms, they would quarantine you and then test you. So Houston's handling it weird, but that's other places. TCU seems to be doing everything the right way as of now. So
yeah. Yep. Do it the right way all the way to a championship.
Yep, there we go. And then, I meant to mention this in the baseball segment. We totally glossed over this. We're on the final fours of our jersey. Technically still six left because the two races today are pretty close.
Yes.
Are going on right now in the colorful region.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on Thursday, there's still time to vote before Friday at what would be around noon.
Like noonish Friday.
Yeah, and then we'll have final four and championship next week. And also, don't forget... Friday and this weekend, if you are listening to this on Friday, round two of hashtag Big Boy Summer, our best O-line bracket.
With some corrected
yes.
corrected stats and names.
My amended 2017 graphic.
Yes. So it should be better. Time to check that out. I'm trying to look up the... I keep looking things up and it keeps taking forever. So I need to just get rid of the internet.
Tisk, tisk.
Looks like...
Thanks a lot, Al Gore.
I blame AT&T because they're the worst.
Yeah,
looks
that's
like
true.
The number one seed in the modern Arch TCU, the famous Matt Curry home run uniform, is losing right now.
Oh, really?
55% to 45%. It's still close.
Wow.
So just the script Horned Frogs in the front.
Wow.
Yeah, yep, and that's in the modern version. And then in the throwback version with the same basic jersey, the gray with script frogs and purple script frogs. Purple has a 51.1% to 48.9% lead.
Wow.
So get your votes in early yes. and often. Make your voice heard because your vote counts in this, if nothing else.
It matters.
It matters here. So get your votes in for that. And then natural segue, you made the bracket yesterday for basketball.
I did.
Jersey preview. And there's some doozies in there.
Oh, man. Are there ever some gems? There are some that are beautiful, and there are some that are beautiful.
Yeah. They're like only a mother could love, and we're their mamas.
Oh, man.
There are some real bad ones in there. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. We have more jerseys for that than we did for baseball. So it's like play-in games and stuff like that.
Yes, a 50-team bracket.
50-team bracket. I'm sure you had to Google real hard to find
something. Oh, dude. Like and I had to think so hard about how to seed it. Yeah. And because I was trying to – I broke it into four regions again, but then I was trying to – you know, make sure that I was doing okay. Because at first I tried to just rank all of the home jerseys, rank all the away jerseys. And I just did this based on personal preference. I was I cannot begin.
I had no input on this. This is all your baby.
I was like, I can't.
Like with the football one, that's all your baby.
Well, but also with football, I tried to take into consideration what I thought most people liked in addition to my opinion. But this one, I was like, I can't do that. I was like, I'm just going to vote it based on how I like
up
it.
There and it's too much. It's just too much.
But the play-ins made for some complications. But I feel like I put together something that I feel pretty good about.
I think it'll be good. I saw one of the jerseys from this year, the throwback uniform that TCU wears now, was nominated for best jersey of the year.
The purple script frogs?
The purple script frogs is a good look. So
that was my number one seed, a sneak peek. Number one seed in the modern away region.
There you go.
So, even though we've worn that at home.
But yeah, with basketball, it's so you wear kind of – you tend to wear the same ones at home and away, but it's not – crazy to wear them on the road.
Yeah.
Same with baseball, too, though. Baseball's like that, too.
Yeah, which is why I lean towards saying whites versus colors in that. But yeah.
That's how you separate your laundry, so it makes
sense. Yeah, exactly.
It makes sense in a way.
Yeah, you don't want a pink sock in the whites.
I do, but...
Do you?
I don't have any pink socks, unfortunately. I have a pink towel over there.
I should say red sock, because that turns the whites pink.
And the Red Sox cheat, so don't support them at all.
I was watching, I love this movie, Fever Pitch, the other day.
Oh, yeah. I watched it for the first time a couple months ago. I hadn't seen it before.
Really?
Yep.
I love that movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, me and my wife both love it because she was always like, oh, my God, this was you when we first got together, except with TCU.
And Rangers. You're wearing a Rangers hat, Rangers shirt. I'm wearing a Rangers shirt, too, actually.
Right. But specifically with the TCU obsession.
Yeah, I can see that.
It has to be where, okay, evolve the priorities. Like, we still love the Frogs, yes. but, like, there are things that are more important, you know, like, yes. mature, you know, all of this.
Human connection and whatnot.
Yes, but that's it's such a fun movie, and it's funny.
It's a fun movie.
And it's heartwarming. And
it's all very that. It's very sentimental.
It's heartwarming and sentimental until then, after they win the World Series, and you're like, oh, I'm so happy for them, and like, oh, and then they went on and won, like, way too many more times, and it got really old. Yeah.
And now we hate Boston again.
Yeah.
Not as much as the Astros, but we do hate them still. Yes. So, yeah, so there's your baseball and basketball and whatever else rundown. So some basketball offers went out the other day. A couple of Omaha guys, segue from baseball to basketball. Jason Green, 2022, 6'7", 205 power forward from Omaha. TCU, Iowa, Kansas State, Creighton, and Nebraska have offered him. I kind of bet he believes he stays in state, either Creighton or Nebraska. Probably Nebraska.
Well, I was going to say probably Creighton. Yeah.
You don't know anymore.
Like, I feel like if I'm a kid from Nebraska, if I'm going to try and put myself, I'm gonna use my actor chops, I'm going to create a backstory for myself, put myself in Lincoln, Nebraska, next to a cornfield, and I'm great at basketball, I feel like I'd probably rather go to Creighton than Nebraska.
Probably.
I mean, sure, Nebraska's in a more marquee conference, but is Nebraska a real contender ever? No.
No, Creighton is, though.
Yeah.
And if you're better at football, you're going to not go to Nebraska, too. So
yeah.
That's how Nebraska recruits talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're from Nebraska, the best is just get out.
Yeah.
move to either
run
Indiana
or
Texas or wherever else you want to go. And then another kid from Omaha, St. Thomas. His actual name is St. Thomas. It was very frustrating to try and Google.
saw a lot of island pictures. Yeah.
But also, like, there's a college, I think in Minnesota, St. Thomas.
Yeah.
It still exists. 2021 small forward, 6'6", 200 pounds. TCU and Virginia Tech are his first Power 5 offers, but he also had one from Wofford.
Oh.
So shout out Mark Cohen for yes. for the Wofford love.
The Terriers.
Yep, go Terriers. I was rooting for them a year or two ago when they were like a top, I don't know if they were a top seed or not, but they went on against, was it against Duke maybe? They played in like the first or second round?
Yes, I
think
I remember
they played
that.
Duke and Zion in the first or second round.
And yes.
A bit of a run.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so something like that. Who knows?
I'm so sad that March Madness didn't happen this year. Oh, we were robbed, Billy.
Yeah.
We were truly robbed.
The TCU women were robbed.
Yes.
The men's season ended right where it should have been.
I meant we as fans,
as fans
of
robbed.
Sport.
But at least we don't have to worry about Baylor somehow winning.
Like, yes.
I don't think they would have won. But
oh, that is the one thing that is just so delicious about all of it.
Yeah.
The one year that Baylor had a legitimate shot to make a run at the Final Four, and they didn't even get a chance.
They'll be good again next year. They bring back a lot of pieces, but it's frustrating that they'll be good again next year.
Well,
Tech will probably be even better next year, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So what a world we live in where Tech and Baylor.
World.
Kansas is going to get in trouble soon.
Mm-hmm.
After how hard OK State got hit for a very minor infraction, compared to what Kansas does, what Duke does?
I don't know, man. You say that, but so far, it seems that the trend is if you admit guilt, then you're going to get popped. And if you fight it and just, you know, plead the fifth, and no matter how damning the evidence is,
you
say, oh, I didn't do anything wrong, then nothing ever happens.
Or if your colors are blue, like Duke, North Carolina, or Kansas, then you're fine. They're not going to hurt you because they're ironically blue bloods.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
Very much so.
Yeah. So they don't get in trouble. It is gross.
Well, but I mean, look at Baylor. You know, they haven't really ever received any legitimate punishment.
Oh,
I mean, outside of, you know, that one year of sanctions.
They lost all their recruits. But even then, they weren't like forced to leave.
Yeah.
They just let them go and they got. I think they were given like a 1 year bowl ban, but they went 1-11 anyway or something like that.
Yeah. So it didn't matter. Yeah.
It didn't matter.
You know, and you're talking about that was a situation where, like, sure, they went ahead and fired Art Briles. They made some firings, but there wasn't any real, like, attempt to, first of all, admit any guilt or make an attempt to, you know, seek out
atone.
Any legitimate change.
Yeah.
Atone is a good word for it. Yeah. So that seems to be the way of things in college sports.
That's Baylor all together for you.
Yeah.
Again, were they getting in trouble with their basketball program 15 years ago for everything that happened there?
I don't think so.
I don't think they got in real trouble either.
No. I guess, you know, the real punishment was the journey, wasn't it?
it's like
the friends we made along the way. The friends we killed
the
along the way.
Of a Lord of the Rings movie right there. they self-policed there and saw what you saw. But then the last kid we want to talk about here is Tyler Smith. 2023, 6'7", 195, small forward from Houston. Really early, obviously, 2023. So that means, did he just finish his freshman year or would he... Is he even going into his freshman year?
Math.
he just finished his freshman year. So
yeah.
So that's how that works. He'll be a five-star on Rivals whenever they do this. He's listed as the number 10 overall player for that class by ESPN, already a five-star there. So the coolest thing about it, though, was Marcus Sloan, a friend of the podcast and friend of mine, and kind of announced it on Twitter that he got that offer. So he got the offer from TCU. So keep an eye out there, I guess. We'll see. TCU doesn't tend to get all the five-stars in basketball. But things are changing. Things are changing.
Mm-hmm. Changes in your habitat, changes in recruiting and the world.
The world in general.
Lots of changes.
So we'll see all that.
Turn and face the strain? Or is it chain?
Changes, time to face. Is it time or turn?
I thought it was turn and face the strain, I think.
Strange?
Strain, I thought. Or maybe it's strange.
Well, you need to quit looking so weird. You can tell we're a mid-June podcast now. We've hit all the semi-important news, and now it's just making stuff up now. Like, we're going to go into the best 90s, 91 to
90. Turn and face the strange.
That's what I said, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I was right.
Yes.
Take that. The best 91 to 90 players of all time. 91 to 99 players of all time. I know y'all are sad this is the end of this segment and this piece. So we had a couple ideas sent in by listeners of things to talk about going forward.
Oh, good.
I didn't tell you because of stuff we've already talked about before that we decided against. But it's some good ideas being sent in. So if you have ideas, things you want us to talk about, because we plan on still going pretty regularly here for the rest of the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, we're only 7 weeks away from August, which is the beginning of football season.
I'm just counting down those weeks, man.
Now the quarantine's starting to fly by. We're getting used to it. We're in our original role, and we're just rolling along. So, but one more time to look back in the greatest ever. So let's go to 91.
One more time.
91 of all time.
Well, to quote Frodo Baggins, I'm glad to be with you, Billy Wessels, here at the end of all things.
You know, it's funny. One of my nicknames in high school was Bilbo.
Really?
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, Bilbo. It also sounds
especially like, since you're the size of approximately 16 Bilbos stacked on top of each other.
Basically. But it also sounds like another fun thing. So let's segue there. 91. Like 91 of all time.
All right. Yes. Unfortunately, no interviews for you this week.
No, we try.
We tried. And they were met with resounding silence.
100% silence. I didn't get any messages back.
Not so much as oh, that sounds cool.
Nope. Nothing. So, but yeah, at least we tried.
Yeah, we tried. So you're 91. Yes. Okay. So first off, an honorable mention for you. Your honorable mention best 91 of all time is going to go to Kent Trammell. Kent Trammell, mm-hmm. folks. And if you don't remember him, that's because he probably played before you were born. So he was a defensive tackle for the Frogs in 1983 to 1987. He was, you know, one of the greats as far as a defensive line for the Frogs that played on that Blue Bonnet Bowl team, you know, before we come into the modern era of amazing defenses under Coach Patterson, specifically amazing defensive lines, which brings us to our best 91 of all time.
No much doubt here.
Yeah, not a lot. LJ Collier. And this is a guy who, you know, began this is a perfect example of Coach P just developing a player, I think.
Yep.
Because he began as a guy like, oh, okay, he seems like a platoon guy, a guy who's going to rotate in. And by his senior year, he was one of the most complete defensive ends in the nation, I would argue.
Yeah.
I mean, just a perfect combination of speed and power. Obviously now playing for the Seattle Seahawks. Hopefully he can stay healthy enough to really get some legit time on the field this coming season. And, I mean, him and Ben Banigou opposite each other. You're talking about a fearsome ridiculous. Duo.
That was unbelievable. The glory is trying to get back to that D-line status.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully O'Shawn Mathis and whoever ends up taking the majority of snaps opposite of him are up to the challenge there.
Well, I mean, it's going to be hard to – we clearly struggled with replacing LJ and Banigou last year.
Yeah.
So maybe someone will step up the Alito kid.
Oh, yes, that's true. Colt
Ellison.
Ellison, yes, yep. Exactly, yeah. Number 92, then, your best 92 of all time is going to go to a little fellow by the name, I say little fellow, he's actually a large fellow by the name of Jim Baiuk. He was a linebacker for the Frogs 1977 to 1980. Nicknamed Bull Baiuk.
Yeah, you can't really call him little if it's nicknamed
yeah,
Bull.
Yeah, that's a great name for a linebacker. So he had, as a freshman, 68 tackles, which got him freshman All-American honors, and then went on to lead the Frogs in tackles consistently for the next 4 years. you know, in a time that was not a particularly bright spot in TCU history, those late 70s leading up to 1980, but dude was a beast in the middle of the field as a linebacker.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I say that like I know what I'm talking about, but according to Dan Jenkins, he was. I don't remember any of it, but...
Right. So, 93, and we're keeping it in the D-line family here. We're just trying to spread a lot of love.
Big boy summer!
Big boy summer, indeed. So, your honorable mention goes to Mike Tuaua, who Coach P... called Tua.
He called him Tua.
That's
yeah,
right.
For whatever reason, he threw an N in there for some yeah. reason. But yeah,
it was. It's like a mix between Mike Tuaua and Henry Nuetti, if you remember him from the late 2000s.
That's a deep pull. But yes,
yes. Do you remember Henry Nuetti?
I remember the name. I don't remember anything about him, but I remember the name.
Yeah.
We probably talked about it on here before.
I was friends with him on Facebook. I'm sure I still am. But for the longest time, his name was Henry Nuday.
Oh.
On Facebook, you know, how people change their
also
names.
Sounds fun to say some things.
Yeah. but so Mike Tuaua, obviously a key piece on that 2014 team, and went to the same junior college as another great TCU all-timer, Jason Verrett.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Out there in California. But your best 93 of all time, and a player that I loved as a young buck, was Chase Ortiz,
mm-hmm.
defensive end for the Frogs. From 2005 to, I want to say, was 7 his senior year?
Stats right now.
Okay, because I know Tommy Blake's senior year was in 2007, and they were really bookends together, a lot like LJ Collier and Ben Banigu. I couldn't remember, though.
These Chase Ortiz stats, like, I remember him being good. I don't remember him being this good.
Yeah, tell us about
phenomenal.
It.
Phenomenal. Well, like, he had 20 and a half sacks. He had 9 sacks his sophomore year and 9 sacks his senior year, 2.5 sacks and a pick in his junior year, playing 13 games. So I don't know what happened that year. It might have been a weird year or something happened. But
2006 was the year that we beat Tech in the 12-3 game.
Yeah.
That was also the year that we went to the Poinsettia Bowl and beat Northern Illinois, whose running back was Garrett Wolf.
Yes.
And who everyone was like, oh, Garrett Wolf is the best running back in the nation. He's amazing. And he didn't do jack squat against those Frogs.
Yeah, what did they give up that game? Like 30 rushing yards or something like
that? Yeah, it was something appallingly low.
Because Wolf, I think, was averaging close to 200 yards a game or whatever
yeah.
it was. And then he had 30 against
yep.
TCU.
Mm-hmm.
But that checks out.
Yes, yeah, about norms. Right. Yeah, so Chase Ortiz, you know, he was a part of those defenses that beat Oklahoma. They beat Texas Tech. They beat Iowa State in the Houston Bowl. They
ran through the Big 12 before it was even a thing.
Oh, yeah, beat Baylor in 2006 as well. And 2007.
Much,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, not saying as much, but it was still
back then, but it was still fun.
It was always fun to beat Baylor. It was a lot of fun, especially because that was the first time to get a crack at them since Ann Richards made sure that they left us in the dust.
Ooh.
For the Big 12. Yeah. Boo and Richards. R.I.P. But yeah, Chase Ortiz.
Boo dead people.
Now you
definitely can.
Oh, yeah.
I never said you can boo all the dead people you want nowadays.
Yeah, it's very, very in vogue now.
The longer they've been dead, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't say anything back. They can't, justify, what was socially acceptable at the time. Anyway, your best 93s. Of all time. So
Chase Ortiz, yes.
Yeah, Chase Ortiz, your best 93. Now, 94. So I think we should definitely give some honorable mention consideration to Corey Bethley, even though his career is not over with. I think he's, 3 years already of playing as a starter, and he's very much established himself.
Mm-hmm.
Another one who deserves some mention is Robert Pollard. Robert Pollard was a defensive end for the Frogs in those first Coach P years, 2000 to 2003. He was, like I say, as TCU was building that identity as a defensive powerhouse year in, year out, Robert Pollard was a big reason why. But your best 94 of all time, I think you got to look at another defensive end for the Frogs, Josh Caraway.
Yep.
Josh Caraway, who's a guy who I want to say was a freshman my senior year, but I could never have imagined that he would develop into what he became. When he came on, he was super, super skinny.
Yeah.
He looked more like a safety than anything else. And he started getting put in with the D-line group, and I was like, okay, that's a choice. I was like, that's interesting. But, by his senior year in 2015, dude is a freaking behemoth and initiating punishment all across the field.
Well, he had an interesting career where you play as a true freshman in 2012, redshirted in 13, and then 14, 15, 16 was a monster.
Yeah.
So played in every game as a sophomore, started 7 of those games in 2014, had a 33-yard interception against Texas as a sophomore. So in the game where they beat him 48-10.
Yes. I remember that as well. Yeah, good play. Man, and then obviously ended up with the Titans for a good period of time. I'm sure he's still in the league somewhere.
I think he's still on their roster in some way, shape, or form. Maybe a practice squad guy. But he's still NFL.
Yeah, as long as you're collecting an NFL paycheck, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Oh, no. He is currently... he's on the Rams.
Oh.
He signed with the Rams.
Man, TCU West. We got three frogs on the Rams then, including
him. He's on the Rams injured reserve as of he spent all last season on the Rams IR. So I think the Rams still technically have his rights, but I'm really not sure. Because no one knows anymore.
No one knows
the status of anything anymore. But yes, Caraway, another good dude, another guy that came in out of, like you said, of nowhere. Didn't really look like he fit the mold coming in. Now he's kind of shifted back to linebacker at this next level. So
yeah, I mean,
still time for him to put together a decent career.
Well, and do you know, even if his NFL career ended today, another true Coach P success story as far as I'm concerned.
100%.
Yeah. So moving on to 95, we got an honorable mention for Aaron Curry, the transfer from Nebraska who played a key role in that 2015 defensive line.
They pulled a couple good Aarons from Nebraska.
Yeah. That was a good little pipeline in the mid-10s for the Frogs. But I think your best 95 of all time, you got to give some love to another guy who is very closely tied to Coach P. Not only because he oversaw the transition of Coach P becoming a head coach, but also now he is still very much involved with the program, and that is defensive tackle, former defensive tackle, current, I want to say, get his title right, it's something as far as like education coordinator, or he helps the players get their schedules done and organizes tutoring, Sean Worthen, Big Sean. That's your best 95 of all time as far as I'm concerned. Played from 97 to 2000, so he was there from Pat Sullivan to Dennis Franchione to Coach P, and now has been a part of the school moving forward and has had a major impact on a lot of players' lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's good keeping it in family. That's what TCU is primarily, right? Everyone says, oh, it's a family. So you're keeping him in that pipeline, keeping him with GP and the family, if you will. I'm going to keep saying the same thing.
Yeah.
For being there for 20 years now. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a name that I had heard a couple times, but hadn't really reflected on his college career until looking at this.
Yeah, well, he was first team all WAC in 2000. That was when the Frogs were WAC co-champions. LT's senior year, he was second team all WAC the year before that, and was just, you know, he was that guy that you want in the middle of the line, plugging things up, creating havoc. I mean, his senior year, he had 53 tackles, 13 for a loss, 2.5 sacks from the defensive tackle spot, and had similarly great stats the other years that he played as well. So not only – very much like a Dan Sharp pick, you know.
Yeah.
Not only was he a great player, also had a tremendous impact after his playing career, still with the Frogs, and that's your best number 95.
Yeah, I think it's very deserved.
Very deserved.
Hot take.
Sean Worthen is great.
Yep.
Okay, 96 now. Got a couple of honorable mention 96s for you. Wayne Daniels has got to be at least honorable mention 96.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's listening to this, he's probably like, why am I not the best?
He probably is the best, actually.
Wayne's a good dude and was an amazing defensive end for the Frogs, obviously on that Rose Bowl championship team. I think he's got a banner hanging somewhere in the stadium.
I think so.
Right now. But I think your best 96, I think you got to give it to Chucky Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck the Hammer Hunter out of Waxahachie. Dude was what? Just... Yeah, you didn't know he called himself the Hammer?
Chucky Hunter?
Yeah.
He's from West Monroe, Louisiana.
Where did I say he was from?
Waxahachie.
Oh, pfft, that's my bad. He's from West Monroe.
I would know where he's from.
Like, oh, man. You know what I remember? He was in the same... This is... very convoluted. He was in the same recruiting class as Ladarius Brown, who was from Waxahachie, right?
Correct.
Yes. That's where I got him confused.
They didn't really look much alike.
But they were the two top recruits in the class.
Okay, fair.
And I remembered I was a part of a recruiting kind of, not retrospective, but, you know, just like, hey, look at who all we signed while I was with TCU 360. And I remember being in a conversation about like, oh, yeah, one of the best guys is from Waxahachie. And for some reason, I attached that to Chucky. Okay, anyway, he's from West Monroe.
Part of that pipeline where West Monroe was putting defensive end stud to TCU for the longest time.
Yeah, well, and Chucky was a defensive tackle.
Yeah, defensive line stud.
Yeah, and Chuck was, I mean, just, you hear the term tossed around a lot, like, this kid's got a motor, right? I mean, Chucky personified that. He was just the no-quit tough in the middle of that line, and doesn't look like a particularly huge guy, but man, he had fight in him. I mean, he was just a beast in the middle of the line.
Also, just one of the like big teddy bear dudes.
Oh like, yes, nice yes, guy. Just the best. Yeah, one of those guys, and there's so many of them who is just like the biggest sweetheart off the field, mm-hmm. and then you put him down there between the whistles, and man, he's gonna fight you with every single thing he's got.
I'm trying to compare their stats though, because I think Wayne Daniels is an All-American.
He was an All-American?
Yes, he was an All-American.
What? Are you serious?
First team All-American by the Football Writers Association in 2010.
Oh, dang.
Well, honorable mention All-American by SI.com.
Ah. Chucky didn't have any postseason honors like that?
Chucky was All Big 12 a couple times.
Man, okay. That's what
I was quiet there while you talked about him. A little bit, because I'm like trying to read his stats. And the thing is, Wayne Daniels only played 2 years. Chucky, I think, played at least 3 years, maybe four.
Yeah.
But like, look at, like, Daniels had...
I did not remember him being All-American.
Sacks over the 2 years he played. Like I said, was an All-American in 2010. 39 tackles for loss. Like, or 24 tackles for loss, 39 total tackles. Like, I don't know, man. I just think it's hard to be like, this guy's an All-American, he's not as good as this guy who was All Big 12.
That's a mistake on my part.
Unanimous first team All-Mountain West Conference. I'm just going to go through his, here's Wayne Daniels' bio on GoFrogs.
Okay.
First team All-American, SI.com All-American, unanimous first team All-Mountain West. Him and Andy Dalton were the only teammates as unanimous Mountain West Conference picks. Went to the NFL Players Association game, went to the Combine, had a career high 6.5 sacks, 14 tackles for loss as a senior. He had two fumble recoveries. Let's see, played in the Rose Bowl, had six tackles, two for loss in the Rose Bowl, two fumble recoveries on a senior season. I think he's only played 2 years, and he was second team All Mountain West as a junior, 2009. So
wow,
hey,
you know what? Let it never be said that I will not admit a mistake when I have made one. Well, I did not remember him being All American, and I think it was the discrepancy that threw me off is I was thinking Wayne played for 2 years versus Chucky was like a mainstay from 2012 to 2014 at least.
Chucky played 3 years. And I mean, also had 8.5 sacks as a defensive tackle, so it's a different position.
Yeah, I mean that's an impressive stat as a tackle.
No, it's they are both great. This is probably the closest margin we've had for like a discussion here. But like Wayne Daniels is an All American.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be like, well, da 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 da. You can't go wrong either way. But I would vote Wayne Daniels.
You convinced me. Okay, good. Like it should be Wayne. You're 100%. I know both of those guys.
So both it's good
no,
dudes.
Yeah, it's both no no dudes. Hate to no. either of them. Yeah. And I wasn't even thinking about Wayne being an All American. That had completely slipped my mind.
Changes it.
It should absolutely be Wayne Daniels. Yes. So yeah, but yeah, there we go, folks. You witnessed a decision in real time. Wayne Daniels is in fact your best 96 of all time.
See how we can have the debate. We can discuss. Provide new information and everything else like that.
Yes.
All right, 97. This is also one I thought was interesting decision.
Really? Okay. Well,
I'm trying to find the honorable mention stats. I guess we can say that. So you have Tommy Blake as an honorable mention.
Yes, Tommy Blake's an honorable mention, and it was tough for me because you look at his sophomore and junior seasons, and he just lit the world on fire. He was amazing as a sophomore and a junior at TCU. But then that senior year, when everything kind of went off the rails, and that really... harmed his legacy in a sense.
In a bit.
That's where I ran into the problem of like, when we're looking at, just to give everyone full disclosure, we're choosing between Tommy Blake and Royal West, who everyone's going to have memories of Tommy Blake. Not a lot of people listening to the podcast are going to remember Royal West.
True.
He was from the mid-90s with the Frogs. Let me pull up some stats for him here real quick.
Well, Royal West, he was a two-time All-Southwest Conference selection in 93 and 94, and when he graduated, had the school sack record with 22.
Yeah.
And so, he played, was all conference. Tommy Blake had, 20 sacks in, or 19, I don't know how to do math, 20 sacks, playing essentially 3 years, but like two halves and two fulls.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And there's a lot of minutiae and things that you could get into about that senior year with Tommy Blake and how, he had some personal issues go on and he came back out of shape. And I've heard stories about, what it was like in the locker room when Tommy Blake came back after those personal issues.
I don't have
issues.
A problem with it being Royal West, but I just thought it would surprise people when, like, Tommy Blake was amazing when He was until he wasn't. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, you know, that year, because I remember going into that 2007 season, the poster for the season was basically Tommy Blake.
Yeah.
It was a giant Tommy Blake, like, screaming, you know, in victory. And then you had, like, small pictures of other players.
We thought he was going to leave early and go pro, and it was going to be a big deal.
Yes.
Turns out he probably should have.
Oh, yeah, but, 100%.
But it was just, like, how big a deal he was in 07.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 06 specifically.
Yeah.
Because I remember going into that Poinsettia Bowl.
Yeah, going into the 07 season, yes.
Yeah, going into that Poinsettia Bowl, I was like, oh, man, he's going to leave. It's going to suck. I hope he stays. And it was basically like he announced, like, I want to say he announced right before the bowl game that he was going to stay. And I was just, like, so overjoyed. And he had played a great bowl game. And, you know, he was one of the reasons I had such high hopes going into 07. And, you know, then just things, like I say, just kind of went off the rails. But yeah, and it's because of, you know, Royal West's complete career, and he also was such a trailblazer as far as the modern era for the Frogs and being like a legitimately solid defensive lineman before Coach P got here. That's kind of why I gave him the nod over Tommy Blake. But if you disagree, I mean, by all means, argue.
No, I think it's fair, and I do like the fact that we honor the past when we can, because there was a bad 50-year gap there, mostly for the Frogs, and we can honor someone who stood out then, and also educate people. So I got no problem giving it to Royal West, because again, he was the best ever when he got to TCU. Mm-hmm. Like when he played at the time, he was the best to ever play at TCU. Now the whole game has changed, everything's changed the last 30 years since he played, but 26 years, I guess, technically, but I got no problem honoring the past.
Yeah.
So give it to Royal West, but I thought people might have been confused when they see Tommy, like, oh, wouldn't he amazing? He was, and then, like you said earlier, he wasn't.
Yeah. So. Well, and for what it's worth, you know, we mentioned how we've referenced Dan Jenkins pretty heavily in the creation of this list. He listed Tommy Blake as an honorable mention as well.
Yeah.
And this was written in, I think, going into 2007.
Yeah, it was written in 06.
Yeah, so this was
before he went off the rails.
Yeah, so but he was already established as being amazing, you know. So this was after the second amazing year, and Dan Jenkins was still like, I give it to Royal West. Yeah. So I trust Dan Jenkins' judgment just as much as probably more than I trust my own.
I think you say mine, and you should. 100%. Yeah. Just more than either of ours. Can we do 99 before 98?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah,
because 98 is a very well-known player, and 99 someone that not people know, it was very good, but not the level of what 98 was.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So
or you can just call 98 100 because that's how important he was.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
Okay, so 99 for you was a defensive end, a different one than 98.
Yes.
But Chance McCarty is your best 99 of all time. He was he played 93, 96, and 97. Wrap your head around that. He was all whack, though, in 97, finished his career with 92 tackles and 10 sacks. Yeah. So, you know, for a school that hasn't had just a ton of standout 99s, that's definitely the guy that I would give the nod to, all whack performer. But 98, now we come.
98 is, we don't talk about him as the Mount Rushmore guy typically, because it tends to go to the quarterbacks. But this is another guy that deserves to be on a Mount Rushmore discussion.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, if you take quarterbacks out of it, I think he's up there.
Certainly yeah, I think that's fair. If you take quarterbacks completely out of it, yeah, absolutely. Certainly in some kind of, I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame, the TCU Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and like, I guess we're talking about Greg Townsend here. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, Greg Townsend is your honorable mention. He was a defensive tackle for the Frogs in 81 and 82. You know, and he was definitely a great player, but can't hold, I mean, no offense to Greg Townsend, can't hold a candle to your best 98 of all time. And a dude I was really hoping would be able to talk for the podcast.
Yeah, we tried.
But Jerry Hughes, ladies and gentlemen.
Like we said, if you take quarterbacks out of it, he's one of the probably top five defensive players of all time.
Well,
top five non-quarterbacks of all time.
He's one of those. I mean, there's multiple positions at TCU where you can unquestionably say, that dude's the best who ever did it. Like LT, best running back at TCU. You don't even have to think about it. There's no discussion. Josh Doctson, best wide receiver. Jerry Hughes, you look. That's the best defensive end that's ever played 100%. At TCU. And it's going to be hard to find another one who's better.
So me and him had the same graduation ceremony.
Yeah,
so we had the same graduate. Like it was funny graduating at the same time as him, because it seemed like half the audience was there for him to watch him graduate. It was like, he was in like an hour later, they got to the W's, it was H's and then W's, so they're waiting. It was the loudest I've ever heard Daniel Meyer Coliseum. Like, counting basketball, now they're okay. Like, it was the loudest it had ever been. So, yeah, Jerry Hughes, as I called him back in the day, Jerry Hughes.
Yes.
Is, like, he had 28 and a half sacks.
Man, that's just which crazy. Is all
the records, 15 sacks. The record before that was 9.
Yeah.
He had 3 picks, scored a touchdown in 08 off one of those picks, I presume. 3 pass deflected, 2 forced fumbles the senior year. Obviously still in the NFL with the Bills.
And found a great landing spot at the Bills, too.
Oh, yeah.
Much better than the Colts. That wasn't really quite working out.
You know how mad I was when he got drafted? Because that was the Colts of the 31st pick because they lost to the Saints in the Super Bowl.
Yes, yes.
Like, if he falls to 32, I'm like, I would have died so happy.
Yeah.
But he got picked 31, and they didn't take a defensive lineman there anyway. I think it's a good receiver. Mm. But so I would have been real mad if they had taken like another defensive end, and it wasn't
Jerry. Yes.
But, yeah, so I was hoping he would have fallen to the Saints there. But, yes, he's, I mean, what, 10-year NFL career now?
Oh, yeah.
Because 2010 through
this. Yeah, 2010 was his rookie year. This will be his
10th NFL season. So kudos to Jerry Hughes as, again, a top 5 player in TCU history.
Like, yeah.
It's fair to say.
Yeah, and also the beneficiary of some of the most brilliant photo ops in games in TCU history. You may have seen the one after one of his sacks in the 2009 Utah game when he is flexing in triumph as the Utah quarterback is on his hands and knees in front of him. Yes. And there's another great one from 2008 after he had sacked the BYU quarterback. This one's not quite as
funny.
Yeah, but he's just standing over him and just basically like bent over screaming in his face and just was so empowering after all of the struggles because, you know, we beat BYU in 2005 and then it was like loss and it was like derailing our seasons losing to BYU and that was just, I feel like that was a moment of catharsis for not only him and the team but all TCU fans just screaming at that. John Beck maybe was his name? I can't quite remember.
For BYU probably was.
Yeah, man. Something like that. But anyway.
Again, that Utah game here, the game day game, is still my favorite game I've ever attended.
Oh, so fun.
Partially because we got a bottle of whiskey in the student section, but allegedly.
Allegedly.
But yeah, that was great.
This is where you plead the fifth.
Guess his career earnings.
Oh, man. I'm not good at this game.
Ten years in the NFL. He's under contract for 2 more seasons. He's made $64.7 million so far. 2 more years of $7.4-ish both those 2 years. So he's going to make a cool $80 million and then get signed for probably another contract because he's only 31 years old.
That's awesome. And me fixing to turn 30, that's about $80 million more than, than I've ever
him
been
made,
worth.
Him made $79 million is $80 million more than I have.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, yes. So shout out Jerry Hughes. Shout out Wayne Daniels. We fought for you today.
Yes, yes.
Shout out LJ Collier. Shout out all the, like, every TCU athlete ever, because this was fun to do. Like,
yes.
I enjoyed doing this every
week.
Yeah,
if this was a visual medium, we'd have like a little like photo montage with like some inspirational music playing. Yeah,
I can add it to the... I mean, if you've seen, I've published these every Sunday on the website as the 10, as we've talked about on the podcast, I've published them on Sunday at purplemenace.com. So check out there to see these guys one more time. And yeah, it's been fun doing this. So if you got more ideas for more content the next 2 months, because we're running out of ideas, let us know.
So. I'm trying to come up with something, but so far my mind has been so occupied. When I'm not working or doing something else that's important. With uniform brackets. Yeah. I guess we could, after this offensive line bracket, we may end up doing some other position brackets. Kickers. Maybe a kickers bracket. Kickers. You know, if we want to see who's going to face Jaden Oberkrome in the championship,
Who gets to lose to Jaden?
Yeah.
See, what that's all about.
And that's the thing. You know, I felt like that was going to be the case. Like, I feel like it's pretty baked in that the championship for this offensive line bracket is going to be 2009 versus 2017, just like we thought how the football uniform bracket was going to turn out the way it turned out. Yeah. But, you know, the interesting stuff is, okay, well, who beats people out along the way? So far, it's only been top seeds, with the exception of 2011, which I was glad to see. Mm-hmm. I hated to see it at the expense of 2005, but I liked 2011 getting some recognition because I do think that's a vastly underrated offensive line, generally speaking.
I agree. I tend to agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you on a lot of things.
That's good.
Except for Wayne Daniels.
But now we agree. You changed my mind, man.
Yes.
Because I had neglected a very significant piece of information.
Yeah, all American.
Yeah. I didn't remember that. Yes. It's funny because, you know, consensus All-American is one thing, but you forget about people ending up on All-American lists or like honorable mention. Like, you know, it's easy to forget that Greg McCoy was an All-American actually as a return man.
Yep.
You know, it was just like one list, I think, but he's still All-American.
It's also like the Rose Bowl team technically can pull a UCF and claim a national title.
Oh, yeah.
They were on, I think, two rankings polls, had number one, two polls to them number one. So they can pull UCF and claim a national title if they want to.
Yep.
They haven't yet. Kind of think they should, but what I agree.
I don't know.
No, it's definitely cheesy. It's 100% cheap. It's great for UCF to do that to try and play with the big boys. But.
Yeah, if UCF hadn't done it, I'd say it would be such an Aggie thing to do. Yeah, you know. Yeah. But it's really lame. It's like, oh, okay, you couldn't win one for real, like, so you're just gonna claim one, okay, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, granted, it's not like we've been given the opportunity.
Well, no. Yeah, no, 2014. Again, 2014. They, I think, still contend they would have won it.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'll go to my grave shouting that from the heavens.
Notorious, your favorite team hater, Kendall Rogers, just published, which he actually does a great job. I'm just messing. He likes some of my tweets sometimes because he thinks I'm funny.
That's funny.
He listed his best available players right now for the draft coming in, and Baumler is not on it.
Oh.
So maybe he knows some info that we don't know about him coming here. But he's got up to 102 players on here, and Baumler is not on the list.
Mm.
Maybe I spelled his name wrong because I'm trying to do No, it's not on the list anywhere. So maybe that's something we don't know. Maybe it's something we don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? So maybe it's looking like he'll wind up here.
I know that we don't know what he knows.
We don't know anything.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You don't know anything nowadays.
No.
You don't know anything.
I don't know anything most days.
Twitter questions. Here's a question that we don't know nothing about. Doug at Surgery Dude asks, any insight on the tickets for games, season ticket holders only?
None. You have come to the wrong well, my friend.
No insight at all. I think they had the deadline extended to buy them or sell back or whatever. And again, it's June 11th, and it's currently sitting at 50% capacity in the state of Texas.
Yeah, which is there's more season ticket holders than half capacity at Amon Carter Stadium.
So, again, we're still...
Granted.
July, August, we're still 10 weeks away.
Yeah, granted, for the first half of the season, typically half stadium capacity is really that sweet spot for TCU
games. That's where it is because the games are 110 degrees.
Yeah, and people are like, no thanks, I'm going to drink beer in the parking lot. Home.
So it's not... It's not crazy. I tend to think, I've said the last couple of weeks, I tend to believe that the way Texas is reopening, and now tests are on the rise again, no surprise, but the way Texas is reopening, I kind of believe it'll be back to close to normal, if not 100% normal in the fall.
I would think so.
With still 10 weeks of data and opening up to go. So, but we don't know anything, Surgery Dude. I'm sorry. Fernando Coronado Jr.
Yeah. Sounds like an explorer.
Mm-hmm. Who will step up on offense and defense that are not on the radar at this moment?
Well, I feel like we've talked about this.
I think we've mentioned every player by name, but they're all players that are on our radar in some way, shape, or form.
I mean, like, I still think Quentin Johnston's going to play a huge role on offense.
I think he will. And I'll keep going Blair Connor because I think he's under the radar, still considered.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's a fair thing to say. You can pick a running back that isn't Zach Evans. You can pick between Barlow and Foster, your cousin, who's going to be the better running back. Andrew Coker saw limited action last year. I think he's going to take a big step forward this year on the O-line.
I mean, realistically, we're going to be so young on offense.
Yeah.
Opportunities abound.
Duggan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what's funny?
But he's not an under-the-radar guy.
I had a buddy text me today who barely follows college football. He texted me, and like his biggest thing is he thinks he discovered Trevor Lawrence.
Okay.
Watching the playoffs as rookie, the freshman year, he thought for sure, dude, this quarterback's so good. Is anyone talking about this guy? I go, yeah, man.
Literally everyone.
Literally everyone. All season. He watched all he watches are playoffs and like the occasional close game. That's all he watches. He texts me today. He goes, hey, it's funny. I was watching just YouTube and it popped up on this quarterback that I thought Teach was going to recruit. This big guy out of Germany. I was like, yeah, he's coming here. He's like, no way. It's like, yeah, dude. I'm like, come on, pay a little attention, Alexander Honing. So you got a random fan, Alexander Honing, if you're listening, who thinks you'll be a stud who's watched hardly any football. So
if Alexander Honig listens to the Purple Menace podcast in Germany, that would make me such a happy person.
He might. But
let's grow the show, baby. Very, expand the brand across the pond.
We're going to be a global Purple Menace podcast.
Yeah. Well, what other TCU, well, there are no other TCU podcasts, but what other TCU podcasts can even hope to claim such a thing?
No one. None that I can think of.
Yes.
Or Menace of Society over here. On defense, we talk about the offensive guys, but the defensive guys that could step up. Whoever's going to be next to Wallow, because that's a wide open race.
Yes.
Ben Wallace, Wyatt Harris, D Winters is still there. It's totally
the dude wide. From Indy. What's his name? Jamoy Hodge.
Jamoy Hodge.
Yeah.
I like a lot. The kid from Kansas that was a late signee last year.
Oh, yes.
Loved his tape. Blanking on his name all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm forgetting his name. But yeah, that dude was really awesome.
Yeah,
and it looked like he wasn't going to be able to come, and then
came at the last minute. So it depends on who comes in at linebacker.
I want to say it's Dylan something, yeah, or something with a D.
It was Dylan Thomas. No, that does sound familiar, and now I feel real stupid because I should know this.
Yeah,
but at least I admit when I don't know things.
Yeah,
which is often. Now I got to pull up his name here.
Yeah.
But who else could be? Under the radar. Who's in the other corner? Dylan Jordan.
Well, I feel like... Dylan Jordan. Okay. I mean, the corners are all known commodities in some shape or form.
Who's going to be the third safety?
Yeah, the third safety is going to be the question.
I think Van Zant could be the guy there. Yeah,
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Who's going to step up the other defensive end spot?
Mm-hmm.
Defensive tackle is kind of up in the air, but there's a lot of... like, Sorrels is going to be good.
Yes.
So, it's pretty well-known commodities, at least we say this, but we also talk about this all the time. So
So
glad to give the guys more attention. More
yeah,
games.
It's hard with as much as we talk about TCU football, obviously, to be like, okay, well, who is actually under the radar? Since you know, no one's really under the radar to us.
No, absolutely not. You know, someone asked. So the next question again. So these last questions are from Coronado. Bowl projection for TCU, and it got me thinking. I wonder if anyone has done a way too early bowl projection. And this one has. This is collegefootballnews.com, and somehow it's the first bowl mentioned. That's very interesting. TCU versus Tennessee in the Texas Bowl.
Oh, okay.
I'll sign up for that.
I would 100% sign up for that. And that's a game we could win, baby.
That is a game we can win. That'll be a fun one.
I always love a chance to play a bowl game in Texas, too.
They have Baylor versus Mississippi State in the Liberty Bowl. I was going to say what is now the Cheez-It Bowl.
Yeah, what I was thinking in Orlando.
Yeah,
because that's the third spot, right?
Mm.
If you have, well,
you have the Sugar Bowl. Title, Sugar, Cotton.
Sugar and Cotton?
They both have big well, it depends on the year, depends on how the arrangement is.
Because I was thinking of Alamo as being the second team.
Well, yeah, I think let's take playoff games out of it.
Yeah.
So let's go New Year's Six Bowl, then let's go Alamo, and then probably the Academy will announce the Cheez-It Bowl. Camping World Bowl is what it used to be.
Yeah. We can't quit the Cheez-It Bowl, man.
No. And this one has it as Virginia Tech versus OK State. I'm a go on a limb. I will say for that one, for the Camping World Bowl, now Cheez-It Bowl, TCU Florida State.
Okay. Oh, you're calling the opponent.
I'm calling a shot.
We got to write this down.
I'm calling my shot in Orlando.
What place is that in the ACC?
Last year it was Virginia. Notre Dame filled it last year because there weren't enough ACC teams that qualified. So middle of the pack ACC and probably fourth in the Big 12.
Okay.
Probably a fifth and a fourth and a fifth versus a fifth and a sixth.
Dude, if Virginia Tech can make a bowl, that would be a fun matchup.
Yeah.
That'd be so fun to play Fuente.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd sign up for that too.
Yeah.
It's a mid-pack. That's the bowl like the pot on my head. Again, possible bias. Girlfriend went to Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
But and her brother just moved to Orlando. So it'd be fun to go to that game.
Yeah.
100% be going to that game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm calling my shot now.
Okay.
So yeah. I can see Florida State getting to 7 wins. I can see TCU getting to 8 wins to go there.
Yeah.
Not crazy. Neither of those are crazy.
For sure. That was the one, because I actually did see this Twitter question before we started recording, and I was thinking, I was like, okay, I think Orlando.
Yeah.
You know, what used to be Russell Athletic or whatever, and now it's Cheez-It again.
Cheez-It.
Just as
go.
It should be. But I will tell you, if we go to the if we're in the Texas Bowl, man, I will be there with bells on. I would love that.
Yeah.
I'd love to get to play a middle-of-the-pack SEC team from the East that's totally beatable. possible in Houston with a fertile recruiting ground there and easy to travel to. Man, sign me the heck up for that.
Sign me up for either one of them. So that's the plan. Any upsets this year in the Big 12? He's taking TCU to beat Oklahoma.
I think that is a beautiful choice. I
love that pick.
And I've been thinking that. I've been thinking that, too. I think I said that a couple months ago.
I think they're going to win in 21 in Norman.
Now, that'll be impressive.
I wrote a whole column about it a while back, how it will happen. Mm. I'm tagged freezing goal takes and everything. it's because that's the year we're thinking that's going to be the year. So, yes. I think they can beat Oklahoma here,
dude.
Freshman quarterbacks against GP don't do typically that well.
Yes, you've got a freshman quarterback in Amon Carter Stadium.
50% crowd.
50% rocking purple crowd. You know, we got the echoes going on over the empty seats. But really, like, we've been within an eyelash of beating them so many times, especially last year. I mean, we could have beaten them last year. Yeah, and that's the thing. With a terrible offense, we're still in striking distance. Yeah,
again, Jalen Hurts still hasn't made that first down.
Yes, we're still waiting. Yep. But yeah, I think that the pieces are 100% falling into place for a TCU upset this year of Oklahoma.
I would agree, and even more likely in 21. If you were forced to watch only one game from the Frogs, which would it be? His is TCU Oregon because he was there for the best comeback in history.
That's a great choice. I was there too. That was easily the most thrilling game I've ever been at, I think, just because of just the sheer excitement of that second half.
Yeah. The funniest thing was it was me and Jeremy sitting front row in the media row with an open seating area directly behind Oregon fans that had the duck call, and they were going nuts the first half. Like, oh my god! And somehow they picked up on by us being grim the whole time that we were TCU there for TCU, writing about TCU. So they were talking some crap, and then suddenly things turned around. Yeah, I mean it's either that or the Rose Bowl.
No, yeah,
I think it's one or the other. But the way he said forced to watch made me feel like it's a negative. So I'm gonna spin it. If you're forced to watch one TCU loss, if you had to
watch one like TCU that.
Lose, this is me. My Twitter question.
Yes, the sadomasochist in me likes that.
Yes.
I mean, because my pick was going to be Rose Bowl just because the feels I get at the end, for no other reason.
It's either Rose or Alamo Bowl if you had to watch a win. Now, if you had to watch it, because the other day, this weekend, I met up with one of my buddies from my hometown, Waxahachie, and went to Applebee's because the only bar open at 11 o'clock at night.
It's okay. Nowadays. You can say you like Applebee's.
That's fine. I don't like Applebee's. But they were playing a Rangers game on. And it was a 10-4 loss to Baltimore. I'm like, why is this on? And it was the game where Beltre got his 3,000th hit, but we didn't watch till the seventh inning.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of this? So it made me think, are we getting to the point where we have to watch losses now? So what is the TCU loss that you, if you had to watch one, you'd watch it over and over again?
Oh, man. Well, it'd have to be one that's, you couldn't pick one of the super painful ones.
I can't do 61-58.
Oh, no. I've never rewatched that game.
No, never. I can't do Utah in, was it 08? 08,
yeah.
Can't do that one.
Can't do San Jose State. Can't do Southern Miss in 03. You can't,
If I had to pick one, and I think the easiest game to rewatch again was West Virginia in 2018, because I knew going into that game we had no chance of winning.
Okay, that game was so boring though.
That's why I'm okay watching it again. It didn't hurt. I knew I would have bet every dime that we were not going to win that game, and we got slaughtered. And I'm like, okay, yeah, no problem. I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
That game started off real close. I want to say we were leading at first, and then. That fell apart. I think it scored like two touchdowns in like a 13-second span.
I'm trying to think of a game almost similar to the Kansas game that we lost where it was just comical of like, how are we so inept right now? With like the butt fumble and everything that happened in that game.
This game I'm talking about, West Virginia, was 3-0 TCU after the first quarter, and then the final score was 47-10.
Yeah. Oh, man.
They scored... So they scored it was 3-3 with 6 minutes left in the second quarter. Then they got touchdowns in a minute and 30 seconds apart from each other. I think we muffed like the kickoff or something, because they scored back to back. Then they got another touchdown. Then they got a safety 45 seconds into the third quarter. Yeah, I have no problem watching that game. It also features a Jalen Rager touchdown from Mike Collins.
Oh, okay.
In the third quarter.
Thrilling.
But I also like, I like watching Will Grier play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could go back and watch the 2004 Tech game, the 70-35 game, which again started out fine. You know, we were up 21.
Yeah, it was in the 21-0 in the first quarter.
It was either 21-0 or 21-7, and then all of a sudden
went on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, Sonny Cumbie just became nightmare fuel in a single moment.
and then here we are again. that's the 06 game I pulled up on accident. That was the 12-3 game.
Yes. That was a fun game.
Here's the 05.
That was the most fun, boring game ever.
That's basketball. I don't know why I can't find. Oh, darn. I can't find the football score. Sucks. Shucks. And it sucks. Either way.
Shucks sucks.
We clearly lost some steam there. Yeah. We clearly lost a little steam the last minute or so of the show. So we'll wrap it up here. Oh, man.
I still haven't given an answer. I don't know.
Oh, you don't have an answer yet?
I don't know.
You're forced to watch forced to take an L?
I don't know. Maybe. Geez, man, that's tough. Because literally every loss that's coming to mind, I'm like, oh, that was frustrating. Oh, that was because I was like, oh, maybe the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl because it was my last game. I was like, oh, I couldn't watch that over and over Scott again. Allison. Or like, I was like, oh, the overtime loss to Tech that year. Or nope. I can't come up with something, man. I have to think about that
a
long time.
It's gotta be a blowout when you're not expecting to win. Like I would pick, like that's what I said. My West Virginia loss isn't painful.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm watching that one again. I might watch it today.
Okay, have at it, man.
Clint, promote something.
Follow me on Twitter, @Clint_Foster55.
@BillyWessels, @CC_Rivals, @Scoop_It on Instagram. Talk to you guys next week.